Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
It's part two of JG's Radio Free Insanity.
All right, so join me in welcoming Matt Heisen, formerly known as Spike Dudley. Matt, what's happening, man?
Oh, not too much. Lazy Wednesday. Did my shopping. Got a beef barley stew on the stove. Life is good.
Yeah, you sound happy, man. You sound happy.
I am happy. Life is good.
Is it? How is life after World Wrestling Entertainment? Better or worse?
I'm definitely a much happier person. You know, the grind of that place really eats your soul away. You know, you got to eat a lot of crap, and you got to eat it with a smile. And I kind of rediscovered my love for wrestling. Having an absolute blast being back out on the indies. I'm really having a good time. So, I mean, life is good.
Well, I mean, when you were with them, and one of the weird things about that company is that they seem to have this fetish for huge guys, and your entire gimmick was that you're not huge.
Right. Well, that's my gimmick.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think that they grasped the gist of that? Because towards the end, they were really kind of trying to figure out how to promote you. Do you think they ever really figured out what was special about your character?
No, I don't. I don't think there's enough wrestling people making decisions back there that they can really grasp it. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of the TV people are strictly, oh, Hulk Hogan, oh, big guy, and then they see me and they go, what the F, you know? So, I don't think they ever really figured out how to use someone, you know, of my stature. You know, obviously minus the Rey Mysterio talent, just because he's a phenom, you know? I mean, he's easy to use. I don't think they ever figured out the whatever you want to call it, the Spike Dudley concept.
I hear you. Well, you came in with a bang, man. You came in at during that big ladder match where Rhino debuted and you debuted, and it seemed like there was all this energy to try to kind of beef up the three teams. It was Edge and Christian, the Dudleys, and the Hardys, and they brought in, you know, Lita, and then they had Rhino with Edge and Christian, and you with the Dudleys. And right. It seemed like there was all this energy and all these things going into to getting this big three-way feud, and then next thing you know, it was kind of, you were pulled out of that, you were put into the Molly Holly situation. Did you ever feel that you were in a storyline that made it all the way through?
No, absolutely not. You know what I mean? I got involved in a couple of storylines, but regardless of how well they got over or didn't get over, it was only, okay, we'll give you a couple weeks' worth, and then we'll just put you back down on the heat velocity list. You know, and whatever. I mean, I never tried to figure out the politics of the place. I never went around kissing ass or begging or trying to get, you know, I just said, okay, if this is what they want me to do, I'll be happy to do whatever they tell me to do. So, I mean, I thought the Molly Holly thing was something that was a really hot angle, and they just dropped that, you know, before it even took off.
Yeah.
And once it happened, I said, okay, I see how this place works, so I'm just here to keep my job, and I'll do whatever they ask of me, which is what I did for pretty much the, whatever, 4 or 5 years I was there.
See, what amazed me about the Molly Holly angle was I still remember right before the King of the Ring in 2001, they had to do the angle where Austin was running around with a petition, so you didn't have to fight Benoit and Jericho, and they had you in a segment where you tore up the petition because I think he called Molly a bimbo.
Right.
It got a reaction. It was huge. It was a huge reaction. And watching it, I remember thinking, it was finally a spot where they found a way to put you into a situation where you could fight the right opponent with the right kind of angle. And then that, too, that was gone right afterwards, too.
You know what it is? I mean, one, if you can't get over working with Austin, then hang up your boots and never get in the ring again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So having him there certainly, of course, helped the angle. I think what they lacked was, okay, we had the match, and Austin kicked my ass in 5 minutes. What do we do from there? It's all over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't really have any vision or foresight to continue that angle and go, hey, he can just be a scrappy guy that's, you know, just trying his best to stick up for his girl. I don't think they thought long-term when they did that. I thought they were just going for the cheap one-night pop, and then, okay, we got him over, and now forget about it. You know, I think they kind of have their list of guys they're going to push and guys they're not going to push, and if you don't fit a certain criteria, they're not going to push you. And that was pretty much the experience I found.
Yeah, at what point did, because I ask almost everybody that comes on here, when you first got with the company, obviously everybody's excited when they first get in there. At what point did it start to become clear to you that, maybe you weren't going to be able to rise to any level that you thought you you might be?
The first night that I showed up.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I went in, I did the run, and it was Bubba and Devon against Edge and Christian, and I did the surprise run in and cost Edge and Christian the titles. The Dudleys won the title. When the night was over, you know, they wrap up TV, it's about 11:30, one of the higher-ups came to me and said, Spike, the writers are having a hard time realizing that you're a wrestler, so could you please come to work in a jacket and tie so they can see that you're a wrestler and not just, you know, somebody else?
What?
And I went, okay. I mean, these people are morons.
What is that? Yeah, what does that even mean?
This is the shit I'm going to have to deal with. Oh, can I curse on this?
Yeah, I'll go fucking crazy.
Say, okay, this is the shit I'm going to have to deal with. I'll do it with a smile. So whatever, in the next couple days I showed up with a jacket and tie, and then, you know, whatever. But I mean, that's the mentality there. You know, they've got people that have no clue, have never even watched wrestling, yet they are in charge of writing the angles and in charge of promoting and things like that. So, I mean, it's just such a giant corporation that it's so far removed from what pro wrestling is about. It's sports entertainment in that company, and strictly sports entertainment. You know, they're interested in how many video games they can sell, or they're, you know, it's almost like the shock jock radio where, you know, okay, we can write a cute rhyme or say boob, and that's going to get a pop and get ratings for that quarter segment hour, regardless of what that does to sell tickets at the arena 2 weeks away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So whatever, it is what it is. It's a giant corporation, but it's very far removed from pro wrestling.
See, one of the things about you is you had wrestled for ECW and WWE primarily. So, I mean, you went from really a company that focused so much on being a wrestling company to a company that focused so much on not being a wrestling company. What was that transition like for you?
You hit it right. When I first got the call, I was excited. ECW had folded. I was sitting there going, okay, maybe I'm going to have to go get a day job. Bam, I get a phone call. Okay, you're working in the WWF. And I went, great, you know, this is cool. But, that passion that... it's not even the passion, it's the trust that you had in ECW. I knew what Paulie was all about. I knew what the promotion was about. I knew the guys there. It was very much an all-for-one, one-for-all attitude. Everybody just wanted to go out and put out a kick-ass show. The WWE, it's not. It's a lot of me, a lot of backstabbing, a lot of manipulation, a lot of, you know, who gets to Vince last, you know, who puts the word in Vince's ear last is the guy that's going to get pushed. It's too much political gaga, and it's very much removed from what I got into the business about, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It wasn't a hard transition, because I was riding that high of, man, I, you know, went from South Philly to whatever it was, the Houston Astrodome. So, I mean, that was all pretty amazing and things like that, but it's not pro wrestling anymore, which is disappointing, because it should be.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, you spent a lot of time in that company, and you saw a lot of the changes, and I guess the improvements, the dress code, and things like the travel changes and things like that. What was your opinion of some of the changes that John Laurinaitis made?
Well, I mean, I don't know. The dress code, I didn't really care about. So they wanted you to dress business casual. What's the big deal? You know, that they just wanted a collar and shoes. I can live with that. You know, that's some level of professionalism. I guess what I have a problem with is that most of the guys are independent contractors. You're hired to come in and wrestle a show, yet you're told, you know, what to wear, when to be there, how long you've got to be there. And on top of, they're trying to put us on the same level as NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, all of that, yet none of the guys make anywhere near the salaries, you know, with the exception of this elite few. And, you know, we travel in middle seat coach classes and things like that, but they want us to present ourselves like we're multimillionaires. You know, it's a real contradiction of the way they treat the talent, yet the way the talent has to, you know, present itself in the public. So, I mean, I think the changes were strictly to appease certain people in the top office, and it didn't really have any effect whatsoever on the product. Did we sell more tickets because guys dress nicer? No, I don't think so. You know, so a lot of the changes were just strictly ornament, you know, dressing.
No, totally. Well, how did you feel about the, I mean, one of the other main topics of WWE, especially in the years since you've been there, has been the slow push towards real nepotism when it comes to getting the McMahon family on TV. What was your opinion about them as characters?
You know, some of it was good, some of it was bad. I mean, I think Vince is awesome on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, he always has been. He's got a great head for it. He knows what to say, how to say it. His facials are phenomenal. You know, Shane got his stuff over by doing the crazy extreme wrestling with, you know, Kurt Angle and with Kane and all that. As characters, aside from Vince, I don't think any of them are really that great. You know, I mean, they kind of seem like low B grade actors to me, you know. So, I mean, them as characters, Stephanie and Linda and Shane, never really did much for me as a wrestling fan. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this, because you're known for being one of the extreme guys to take most of the big bumps. When Shane was doing it, and Shane was taking those 75 feet, jumping off the Titantron onto Blackman and all that stuff, the big argument that people had was that he was then able to take off for as long as he wanted in between wrestling, whereas you wouldn't be able to do that. You would have to take the bump and then come back in 3 days. How did you feel about that, and how did other people who are in your position feel about the boss's kid kind of, you know, taking the big spot from the show and then having unlimited time to recoup?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for anybody. I know during the last run when he was running with Kane, Shane was actually in my travel clique, so I spent a lot of time with Shane. You know, I agree with you that I think it's kind of bogus that you just bring one guy in, who, regardless of who the son is, but just give him all of the extreme stuff and nobody else can do anything outside the ring or over the top, just so this guy can get over, knowing that the guy's going to be gone in 3 months. I think that hurts the company. You know, I'm not knocking Shane for it. I'm knocking the overall decision of the WWE to push this one guy to do this inhuman stunt that nobody could walk away from, yet he's just the guy that walks in off the street. That takes away from the credibility of the wrestlers that are there when, let's say, you know, whatever, I get powerbombed through a table and I'm off TV for 3 weeks because I have to sell the injury, yet Shane comes in and takes 20 chair shots, falls 75 feet, and then comes out strutting his stuff the next day. Uh-huh. You know, I think it hurts the company.
Yeah.
You know, I think it hurts wrestling. You know, I could care less about the individuals involved. I think it's just bad business.
I mean, at this point, there seems to be no continuity with almost anything they do anymore.
Well, I don't know. Since they fired me, I haven't really watched anything, so I couldn't tell you. But, I mean, it wouldn't surprise. There was no continuity when I was there, so the lack of it, if it is today, doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, let me ask you this about when you were released. I mean, one of the things everyone talks about is the fact that, you know, they told you and the other former Dudleys, I guess now, that you guys couldn't use your names outside of WWE. I mean, how do you feel about that? Your feelings about the whole thing?
Oh, I think it's rubbish. You know, that's just a kick in the nuts. You know, because we all had created our characters well before we got to the WWF. They hired us because of those characters we created, you know, separate from the WWF. And then to go, hey, we own you, you can't use it anymore. That's just kicking us in the nuts.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a real slap in the face for three guys that literally put their bodies on the line and spend more time in the ambulances and hospitals getting fixed up and coming back the next night. You know, we really were the soldiers of that group, you know, willing to take any bump, willing to do anything that they ask of us, and to turn around and treat us like that is just a total disregard and lack of respect for what we accomplish, especially those guys. I mean, they raised the bar, Bubba and Devon, with those TLC matches. To do that is just, it's cold. But not surprising. I mean, that's the least of the things that they've done to me. But it's like kind of like the final slap in the face.
Well, is there anything, though, that, I mean, you ever did? That's something that I ask everybody that comes on here. I mean, were you ever involved in anything where you had to be disciplined and you felt that maybe it was done for a reason, any reason like that you could possibly think of that this was done for?
Not with me. I mean, Bubba and Devon had, you know, were in a much higher spot than I was, and, you know, they had more confrontations than I did. I was more or less the team player. I just wanted to get along. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd come in and do whatever they asked of me, and, you know, I'd question it. Isn't that kind of stupid? And everyone would say, yeah, but that's what they want, and say, okay, well, fine, I'll go do it. Can I pinpoint one particular incident why they would want to fuck me? No, I can't, and I still can't understand why they would want to fuck with me, but they have, and that's the way it is. So,
keeping the mentality is that you're going to come back because you would have no choice later on down the line because they have your name, or do you think it's just a matter of they want to make money off of you without having you on contract?
Well, I don't see how they could make money off me, you know.
Well, I mean, the figure.
Whether I'm there or not. I mean, if they have to go and do their ECW things, I'll still get my royalties from that, you know what I mean? What was it? Say that question again. There was a part I...
No, I mean, do you think that it was done so that you wouldn't really have a choice down the line, that you would have to return to them? And...
Oh, no. But, you know what? Because, one, I don't expect them ever to ask me back, and, two, I really have serious reservations as to whether I would ever go back or not. I mean, there's more nobility in flipping burgers for a living than there is to eat their crap again. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I would have real second thoughts about ever going back to work for them. So I don't think they're trying to hold an ace up their sleeve or anything like that. I think they're just trying to protect the entire product and go, anybody that worked here can't ever use that name again unless it's under the WWE. And I don't know if it strictly applies to the Dudleys or just everybody in general. But I'm not, you know, going back there is not really a concern for me.
Well, here's what got me about that is the fact that since they took away your name and they said that you worked here and now you can't use it, don't you look at it more as that's a kind of a way of pushing people almost away from going to WWE, maybe pushing them towards TNA, when they can think to themselves, well, if I'm going to build up a name and they're just going to take it from me at the end anyway, I might as well work.
Yeah, but look at it this way. I mean, the WWE is the only major play. I mean, I'm not knocking TNA, but they're not anywhere close to the financial, you know, monstrosity that the WWE is. They've so eliminated the rest of the talent that they figure the only place anybody can make a living is with them. So it's play by our rules or you're out of the business. Yeah. Now, you know, TNA is certainly a breath of fresh air, and I hope to God that they do well and can get going on a full-time basis where everybody can make big paychecks. But at this point, I mean, they're not even close to the money level that the WWE is at.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they just look at it as we're the only player. It's play for us or play for no one.
No, but I mean, what I'm asking is that, I mean, I totally agree with you about TNA. I mean, they're a good alternative. I don't know. They're definitely not at the point where they're going to challenge them yet. But what I'm saying is, do you think that it's little things like this that WWE is actually going to start giving people reasons to go there? I mean, because before, whereas it's just one money against the other money, now it's little things that you could add on to, like, well, they're going to take away my name, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. Do you think that they're not really realizing that they're kind of pushing people away from working for them or watching their product?
Yeah, there might be that, but look at it like this. You know, before they eliminated everybody, stars would build up their names in other promotions, ECW, WCW, whatever it was, and then they would come to the WWF with a name. Since there isn't really any place to develop a national name anymore, they figure they're just going to create their own stars, which is why they, you know, get rid of a lot of veteran talents and you know, just take their guys from Ohio that they've been training for a year and say, this is strictly our talent. Everything WWE is going to be WWE-produced, homegrown WWE talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they look at any other place as an option to become a name. You know, I think nowadays they think we're the only place you can get on TV. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, you know what? I'm not there for their idiot meetings and when they make their idiot decisions. You know, I sit there and I'm flabbergasted as you when this stuff comes out. So what is their rationale? I have no idea because it doesn't really seem to make sense to me or to anybody else that I know in the business. So, I mean, I don't know.
So you know what amazes me, man? It's that... Now that, I mean, I've been doing the show for a few weeks now, whenever we have people on who have left WWE, even, you know, people like yourself who never really had any problems with the company while you were there, they're releasing all these people, and they're giving them so much animosity on the way out. Well, I remember back in, during the WCW war, many of the people who were leaving WCW were going to WWE, citing the fact that they had such high morale in their locker room, and that was one of the big selling points to make them go there. And now you talk to people, and it sounds like this chamber of horrors backstage. I mean,
oh, it is.
What happened, man?
I couldn't really tell you what happened. I can tell you morale is horrible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm still friends. I still talk with everybody that's back there, and nobody's happy with anything that's going on there.
Was it like like that the whole time you were there? Or did you?
No, but it definitely was on the turning end. You know what I mean? Like, wrestling peaked out. It was just coming off the Stone Cold, Mick Foley, you know, Rock run as I was getting in. And as those guys slowly moved out, morale definitely kicked down. I mean, who knows? Maybe it was the Hunter factor or whatever you want to call it. But morale has seeped down to nothing. You know, like, nobody's happy. You know, it's pro wrestling. How can it not be a fun place to show up and work? Yet, you know, my last few months there, I was a miserable prick.
Yeah.
I hated it. You know, it was, and I mean, I'm living a dream. I'm making a living being a pro wrestler, and I was miserable going to work. That's insane.
It makes no sense. Well, what is your opinion of, you said the Hunter factor. What's your opinion of Triple H and his position in the company?
Hey, you know what? I always got along great with Hunter, but I think there's, you know, if you're a talent and you have all the power, not really anything good can happen as a result of that. You know, again, I'm not there. I've heard tons of stories about stuff that's happened, but I mean, I'm not actual witness to the inside meetings, so I can't come out and bury him particularly, but, you know, it's obvious that, you know, who has stroke and who doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't have stroke, you're not going to be there very long.
That's amazing. Well, what was, one of the things that might have spiked morale, and it seemed to for a little while, because the show seemed to get a little bit better, was the ECW infusion that they tried to do last June. What was the feeling around there, and how did you feel about the ECW one night stand?
I fucking hated it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was not anything I wanted any part of. It was not anything I was happy about. And actually, it's funny, because that was the last show I worked for the WWE. And anybody that was there saw me for 4 hours just sitting in a chair with my head hung low. I was as miserable as I could ever be attending that show.
Really?
I wanted nothing to do with it. ECW really was about going FUWCW, FUWWF.
Mm-hmm.
How can you have an ECW pay-per-view that's owned by Vince?
Yeah.
And it's just, the thought sickened me. And one of the things that was circulating was that it's only going to be ECW, it's only going to be ECW. Well, no, it wasn't. It was a completely WWF show.
Yep.
You know, and the only thing they used was, okay, we're going to sell a bunch of buy rates, and we're going to get the WWE guys over. You know, it was horrifying. The only reason I even showed up was that Paul asked me to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was it. Aside from that, I knew that if you weren't a WWE contracted guy and you were one of the ECW guys coming in, you were just going to get fucked with, and they fucked with those guys bad. It was horrible. I was horrifying. I was miserable. I didn't want anything to do with it. And to be honest, that was it. I hated it.
It kind of struck me as, I mean, that whole period was kind of rewriting the history of what ECW was. McMahon trying to imply that you know, he was the one. I mean, regardless of whether or not he was helping, you know, financial support, right around the time that pay-per-view came out, it kind of seemed like it was all done so he can kind of swing his balls around and tell the world that he was financially supporting them.
You know, you can make your own take on that. I didn't really pay attention to a lot of the promos and things like that they were doing leading up to it. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was. I mean, they were just trying to make money off of it. Everything's about dollars and cents to them. And they looked at it as, okay, we can do this ECW thing and make a fortune off it. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Well, strictly money. You know, their pay-per-view sucks, so let's get an ECW pay-per-view in and sell some buy rates, you know?
Well, let me ask you this. This is on an unrelated subject. You're a former school teacher that became a wrestler. One of the more famous ones, you did the spot in, was it Beyond the Mat?
I misquoted Shakespeare.
Yep. How did you feel about Matt Stryker earlier this year, the teacher turned wrestler who took time off to go do a tour of Japan, but cited that it was a personal day or something to that effect, but more or less kind of gave false reasons for his time off from teaching so he could do wrestling, and then WWE signed him. How did you feel about him and the way he handled himself?
I don't really know any of the details other than what you just said.
Oh, okay.
You know, what it sounds like to me is he was a guy that had a day job to support his wrestling habit, and he got caught. You know, the day job can only put up with the crap so long, and they fired him.
Yeah.
I mean, after I left teaching, I had to go and work an office job, and I would lie to them every Friday to get out of work early to go wrestle for ECW. And after a year, they finally caught me and said, hey, you know, we can't have this anymore. It's us or them. And I said, fine, I quit. You know, I think that's any sacrifice that any, you know, anybody that's paying dues, you have to have a day job, as I said, to support your wrestling habit. But if you really love wrestling, wrestling's going to win out, and you're going to, you know, slack off at your day job. In terms of, well, I don't get what you said, WWE hired him because?
Oh, I mean, because of the controversy that was created for it.
They were just trying to, like, take advantage of the
Well, I mean, you pretty much answered it with what you said. I mean, as far as, I mean, I always thought it was interesting because it's not really, I mean, it's not such a different position, but it kind of is a different position to go from, I think you taught third grade, right?
For 2 years, yep.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that it's definitely a different thing. People don't expect to hear, you know, a third grade teacher going into to Extreme Championship Wrestling is kind of a weird transition there. Have you met any of your students since those days?
I have, no, because I was in California, and I'm back on the East Coast now, but one of them did email me a couple of years ago. So she was third grade then. She must have been 8 or 9, and now she was, like, in her sophomore year of college.
Oh, wow.
And some, you know, she was watching wrestling or something like that, and oh my God, that's Mr. Heisen. And she looked me up on the internet and emailed me and, you know, told me how much she had fun with me, you know, and I was there as a teacher and things like that. And that was pretty neat.
Yeah.
But the only one student got in touch with me.
Well, I'm sure they see you. If you had to pick anybody right now in the current wrestling scene, WWE, TNA, anywhere there is, that you think has the potential to be a big breakout star, who would you pick?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's a tough question.
Abstract question.
mostly because I haven't really watched any WWE. I don't really know any of their young guys, you know, other than guys that I used to see at the house shows and things like that occasionally.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to pick the top guy. I mean, you could pick anybody you've seen recently that you think has potential, whether you saw them on the indies or anywhere else that you think has potential.
You know, that's a really hard question. I'll tell you why. A lot of today's indies workers, today's younger wrestlers, are so concerned about the moves.
Yeah.
How spectacular their triple Lindy DDT is and things like that. And there's very little focus on the emotional aspect of it, on the promos, on grabbing an audience by the balls and not letting them go. A lot of the indies I've seen are just kind of like giant collection of high spots.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's tons of talent. I mean, there's unbelievable. These guys are doing stuff that's just insane. But I've never been one to go, okay, just doing crazy moves is enough to get you over. I haven't seen a lot of work on the promos, and to be honest, today's influx of young wrestlers are all like 200 pounds or around there. I haven't seen many of like the really big guys that are in the business. So, I mean, to pick out any one and go, that's a breakout star, I don't know, because I haven't really seen the full potential. I haven't seen their promos and their mic work, and that's a real important part of it.
See, what you're actually saying is something that I've heard from a lot of people. Do you think that the problem with a lot of the young guys today is that they kind of gravitated towards, you know, the Rey Mysterios and kind of the Jeff Hardy type of quality of wrestling, but never really grasped what it was about it that made it special? They just saw the high spots for what they were and just focused on that?
Yeah, since Vince took over everything and bought out everybody and wrestling went mainstream and there's only been two groups, that, you know, the old school feel is gone. You know what I mean? Like as a fan, like today's fans don't really hate the bad guys and don't really love the good guys. There isn't that emotional attachment. It's, as you said, it's, I don't know, man, it's kind of hard to describe without getting into a big monologue about it, but
I know what I mean.
You need an emotional attachment or an emotional connection between the wrestlers and the fans. And if all you're doing is going move, 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 there's never that emotional connection.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of today's wrestling fans have grown up without that emotional attachment. They just go, oh, wow, he went through a table, or, oh, wow, you know, he 619. And I'm not knocking Ray. Right? I think Ray is an awesome wrestler, just an example of a move.
Yeah.
But they don't have that, oh, my God, the good guy's got to win, or you know, like they don't have that love, that passion that old-school pre-kayfabe wrestling used to bring about.
Yeah.
And because they know nothing about it, it's tough to train them in that.
What do you think it would take to get it back to the way it was?
You'd have to erase the last 30 years and bring back kayfabe.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as long as it's sports entertainment, as long as we come out and go, hey, this ain't real, you know, this is just a fake fight, you're never going to have that emotional attachment again.
No, I agree with you.
You know, so, I mean, it's tough. It's definitely changed. It's there. You know, like, what you need, really, is, like, that mainstream person, be it, like, you know, when John Cena came in doing the rapping thing, man, he hit a vein, and people went nuts for it. You know, you need somebody that has both a good, you know, one, they have to be a quality wrestler, but they have to have something that touches a nerve with the audience. You know, and what that is, who knows? Because who the hell knows what? I mean, everybody that comes along, be it a Rock or a Mick Foley or an Austin, you know, did anybody see that coming 6 months before they became a big star? No. Just something comes along and they hit a nerve.
It was all, I was just talking to, I think it was Pritchard. We had Tom Pritchard on a few weeks ago, and he was saying that, you know, they don't even know what they're looking for until they find it. It kind of just falls.
No, they don't. They're throwing shit against the wall and hope it sticks.
Yeah, and right now they just have a room full of shit.
Well, I won't go that far, but gotcha. You said it.
Well, before I let you go, why don't you give us some of the shows you have coming up? I know you're doing some upcoming indie shows.
Well, the one that's coming up this Saturday, which I'm actually very excited about, is called the Queen City Bash in Charlotte, North Carolina. And it's for a great group that's all proceeds go to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. And if you're not in the area, there's actually an auction online. If you go to queencityclash.com, there's a number of items up for bid. All proceeds go to Cystic Fibrosis. If you see something you like, please bid on it because it goes to a great group. I'll tell you what, let me draw up my little event schedule here.
Right.
Hang on a second. Computers, I hate the freaking things.
No, no, so what we'll do is we'll put a link to on the site. If you guys are listening to this, right now, what we're going to do is we're going to put up a link on the Radio Free Insanity page, and you guys can click on it and take a look at the site that Matt was just talking about.
Right, and then on December 16th, I'm in Rome, Georgia. I know you had Vince Russo on last week.
Yep.
We're doing a show, what's it called, Quest for Glory?
Ring
of Glory.
Yep.
And that's going to be a big show. There's a lot of big names on that. December 17th, NYWC Wrestling in Deer Park Community Center, Long Island.
Are you really going to be out there?
What's that?
That's right near where I am.
Oh, you should come out.
I definitely will, then.
Yeah, that's Mikey's group. It's a great group, really good talent. Great group of guys. Mikey Whipwreck, I meant, if you guys didn't put that together. But the guys I've been doing, I've been working for them pretty full-time for a long time. December 28th, Edison, New Jersey for East Coast Pro Wrestling. December 30th, Adams, Massachusetts, Top Rope Wrestling. Man, it just goes on. January 7th, EWF Wrestling. That's in Marion, Indiana. I just go to my website. How's that? MattHyson.com. Go to the dates. I've got dates all over the place. I'm actually having a real good time with all these indies. Just having a blast. And fine is the wrestling's really great live in the small arenas. Mm-hmm. And I so miss that passion. And I'm just having such a good time going back and wrestling in front of only a few hundred versus thousands, you know?
You sound happy. Plus, you still have a ton of dates ahead of you. So, I mean, it doesn't sound like you're suffering all that much.
Suffer? Shit, they set me free.
Hell yeah.
Are you kidding? there's no suffering. Life goes on, and life is better without the bullshit, you know? Man, I don't miss it. I can tell you, I had a miserable summer, that 90-day no-compete clause. I sat and brooded for those 3 months going, oh, what am I going to do? I don't have my job anymore. And then I realized, I don't need that effing job.
Yeah.
I really don't. I'm having a great time on the indies, and I keep saying the same thing, but life is good.
Awesome, man. Well, yeah. Dude, thank you so much, man, for being on.
Hey, no problem.
And hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Absolutely.
So there you have it, guys. Matt, formerly known as Spike Dudley Hyson, not suffering. after leaving WWE. And I think it's funny that for so long we always used to talk about World Wrestling Entertainment as if they were the end-all, be-all, as if, you know, you either worked there or you cried every day. It sounds like a lot of these people who have left seem pretty happy, seem like they're getting re-energized, and we're getting to the point now where the important thing is no longer being in the big show. The important thing is being a part of the business, and a lot of these guys getting re-energized, rediscovering their roots. So it is good to hear Matt sound as upbeat as he is, and to be as energized about the industry as he is. Great talent, really, and had a fairly successful run in WWE, so it was really good to have him on. Now, the guests don't stop, guys. As we said before, we're going to have more guests each and every week here on World of Wrestling Insanity.com. The guests we've had so far read pretty well. I mean, Matt Morgan, Vince Russo, Earl Hebner, Charlie Haas, Tom Pritchard, Aaron Aguilera, Nick Bockwinkel. I mean, we've been bringing people in here every week, and we are going to make a lot of these interviews available in our archives soon enough. We'll let you guys know more about that as the time comes closer. But definitely check us out again next week. Until then, this is James Gutman thanking you guys for checking out World of Wrestling Insanity.com. You can listen to us again next week for another edition of Radio Free Insanity. Once again, be well. Thanks for listening. And always, speak your mind.
Brought to you by World Wrestling Insanity.com.